Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Pay and Proxy podcast. I'm Meredith Irvine, senior editor of compensationstandards.com. And today I have Margaret Engel and Louisa Haywood of Compensation Advisory Partners on the podcast. They are here to discuss their recent review of forward-looking goals disclosure in LTI plans, which have, of course, taken on some renewed significance following ISS's 2025 policy updates. Before we get into any of that, Louisa and Margaret, could I ask each of you just to give an overview of your background and experience for our listeners?
Sure, Meredith. This is Margaret Engel. Thanks for having us today. I've been a compensation consultant for my career. I worked at several large firms over the years, and I was one of the founding partners of Compensation Advisory Partners, also known as CAP, in 2009.
And my name is Louisa Haywood, and I'm an associate with CAP. I graduated from the School of Industrial and Labor Relations at Cornell University in 2020, and I've been with CAP ever since graduating.
Well, welcome. Thank you both again for being here. I thought it might be helpful for our listeners before we get into kind of your review of the current disclosure practices in this area to talk a little bit about what ISS did on this front in, late 2024 in terms of policies for 2025 proxy statements, annual meetings, and proxy season.
So this is Louisa, and I can take this one. So just for background, ISS has always been focused on influencing companies to have a greater portion of long-term incentives be performance contingent and focused on ensuring that those performance metrics in the long-term incentive plans are sufficiently rigorous to benefit shareholders. That hasn't changed, but ISS is applying more pressure on companies to disclose specific performance targets just for transparency and so that they can assess the rigor of those LTI plans themselves. And really, that will especially come into play when ISS has evaluated a quantitative pay-for-performance disconnect and then is going to dive deeper into its qualitative analysis. And in the past, ISS would mitigate concern if goals were disclosed at the end of the performance period, recognizing the perception of competitive harm by an upfront disclosure. But this year, what's changed is ISS is saying is that that will carry less weight than in the past. And in fact, we are seeing lots of companies receive comments on the lack of forward goal disclosure this year.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. I will just put in a plug since we're talking about the proxy advisor policy updates for this year for a podcast I actually recorded with your colleague, Margaret and Louisa, Sean Bisman, in December of 24 on kind of just holistically looking at the policy updates for 2025 from ISS and Glass Lewis. So I'd recommend that to anyone looking for a more fulsome discussion of all of the policy updates for this year as they relate to executive compensation. So the next just piece of background information I thought would be helpful kind of before jumping into your review of disclosures is to talk about the actual disclosure rules. I think just addressing that does kind of help explain why there's a diversity maybe in disclosure practice here. And Louisa, you teed this up nicely in your prior response. So I'll open it up to the two of you.
Yes, I agree. Louisa teed it up nicely. I mean, as background, the SEC issued kind of a sweeping reform of disclosure rules to be included in proxy statements about executive compensation way back in 2006. And so that included the inclusion of a CD&A, a compensation disclosure and analysis document explaining the underpinnings of the program. There were additional tables and additional information that's been added to in pieces over time. But in terms of the disclosure requirements for forward-looking goals, way back in 2006, the SEC recognized the issue about competitive harm. So, for example, if, as is common today, a company has a 3-year long-term incentive or performance share plan that includes, let's say, revenue targets or profit targets that span 3 years. You know, the proxy advisory firms would prefer to know those targets on the front end to get back to what Louisa said, so they can put forward an opinion about whether the targets are rigorous or less rigorous. But the reality is, if a company does that, companies feel like they're giving away their internal business plan. these programs tend to be based on business plans. So if they're looking for revenue growth of X percent or profit growth of Y percent, that gives the competitive set some insight on where they're trying to go. You know, as a result, companies are inclined not to do it, frankly. I think the majority of companies out there would cite potential competitive harm for making that kind of forward-looking disclosure.
I think just what I'd add to that is that in practice, what we found was that those statements about the degree of difficulty that companies would make in lieu of actually disclosing those goals are very generic. You know, one example I pulled for this podcast was a very simple statement. It's usually one sentence. Management and the compensation committee worked collaboratively to set targets that would reflect our ambitious performance goals.
Yeah, and that's certainly not going to create competitive harm. I mean, that's just a general statement of their position. It's not specific, doesn't give away any internal financial information. And in our experience, that's where most companies are today.
Okay, so companies use that instruction, I think it's instruction 4 to 402B competitive harm argument. So we see some differences in practice here, and you looked into that specifically for the 100 largest U.S. publicly traded companies to see what they are currently disclosing regarding their forward-looking goals and their LTI plans. Can you talk to us about what you found and where there were differences, where, you know, additional disclosure was provided or where companies tended not to disclose more?
Yeah, so where this came out of was we've participated in shareholder proxy advisor outreach conversations this year, and ISS was making the claim that the majority of the S&P 500 discloses forward-looking LTI goals. That didn't align with our experience, and so we wanted to test it. So we looked into the, as you said, 100 largest U.S. public companies ranked by revenue. Of that set of 100 companies, we found that 94% have multi-year performance plans in the long-term incentive, so the vast majority. And then of those companies that have performance plans, 87% incorporate absolute performance metrics, whether it's an earnings or a sales metric or a return metric, for example. And 80% incorporate relative performance metrics. That could be like a relative total shareholder return would be most common, where performance is assessed relative to a peer group or market index. And based on those companies, we find that forward disclosure of goals is clearly a minority practice. Now, the results varied by the type of metric. So absolute performance metrics, like those earning metrics I mentioned, are less likely to be disclosed. 70% of companies are not making that forward disclosure. Relative performance metrics, on the other hand, like that relative total shareholder return metric, is likely to be disclosed. 68% of companies are doing this. That's because, you know, the performance scale for a relative metric might be a chart showing that, you know, the award will pay at target for median performance, below target for below median performance, and above target for above median performance. That's not really a business plan, and it's not going to change year to year. And so it's much more palatable to be disclosed.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically not competitive information. It's not sensitive information. I mean, it's a worthy goal, certainly, to be able to generate shareholder returns that track or exceed your peer group. And also to reduce compensation if the returns fall short of the peer group. I mean, that's an entirely reasonable position, but you're certainly not giving away any sensitive information by making that statement that that is your frame of reference for measuring compensation.
And you also looked at differences a bit between industries, is that right?
Yes. So there are some differences by industries, and one to call out would be that financial services companies are actually much more likely than the total sample to disclose forward-looking goals, even for absolute goals. And the reason is that financial services firms are unique in that they're more often going to be using a return metric, like let's say, for example, a return on equity metric, and they might have a very consistent target each year. They might say, we want an 8% ROE each year, and that feels a little bit more comfortable to disclose.
It also tends not to change much over time. It tends to be fairly consistent, you know, so again, it's not really as much impacted by economic conditions or market forces or competitive forces, kind of a long-term consistent goal. And so these companies are much more willing to disclose that. They probably talk about it in their earnings releases every quarter.
Right. It struck me that the disclosure that companies are providing is easy disclosure to provide, right? It's likely consistent with how the plan was structured the prior year. And so it's probably also not giving the market all that much additional useful information, although still in some ways checking a box for what ISS is expecting, right? In the instances where their relative metrics are in the financial services
context. Yeah, exactly. You okay. Captured it. That's exactly right.
So I'm curious if, kind of given this additional push from ISS this year, if you think, say you were to survey disclosures proxy season, if there will be companies providing additional forward-looking information, including for things like absolute financial goals, or if you think the practice will largely stay the same as it currently is, kind of despite this additional push from ISS.
Yeah, our prediction is that companies are really only going to make changes to their disclosure approach when they are anticipating trouble with ISS and shareholders over another element of the pay plan and expecting potentially poor results on their say on pay proposal, which companies are looking to get, you know, good support on.
Yeah, I think we definitely don't expect wholesale change for sure. Could there be some migration to additional disclosure? Yeah, absolutely. Is it more likely to happen when companies feel that they are going to, you know, potentially lack support for their programs? And this would be an avenue to explore and to open in order to increase that support? Yeah, but I think it's certainly going to be the minority practice, not the majority practice.
Yep, that makes sense. One of the broader shifts that ISS just really signaled this year, but that, you know, I think everyone focused on a lot, is this potential for kind of greater policy changes for next proxy season. And just in terms of how it treats performance-based versus time-based equity, and potentially giving the same credit, so to speak, for time-based equity awards that have extended vesting periods. I'm just curious if you are having, you know, discussions with compensation committees surrounding that potential future shift at this point. And if so, you know, how you're thinking about that, how compensation committees and companies are thinking about that.
Well, I mean, I personally think it would be welcome out there in the world, in the corporate world, because many companies do have difficulty with setting long-term financial goals. You know, the world is a crazy place. The economy changes, especially for consumer-sensitive industries. It's difficult to plan. I mean, you know, the climate we're in today makes it exceedingly difficult to plan. You read in the newspapers every day that companies are paralyzed. That's what I read this morning. So time-based equity is certainly simpler, probably more highly valued by executives and employees who would participate in these plans. So that would be a plus. In terms of ISS's signal that they might be open to next year, it's really not taken off in the boardrooms yet. Because first of all, it's not an actual policy yet. It's possibly a policy. It may or may not happen. Second, I don't think they've been clear about what long-term means. I mean, it could be long-term vest, could be long-term vest combined with long-term hold. And, you know, the big question is what's long? What's long-term? Is it 4 or 5 years? Is it 5 or 10 years? I mean, that has a big impact on how plan participants would feel about that. That would also vary by industry. I mean, some industries tend to have very long-term employee tenures. Others experience much more change. So I think it's really a wait and see in terms of if it goes forward as an actual policy, and then how long-term is defined, 5 years, 4 years, 6 years, 10 years. If it turns out to be something that people feel is acceptable, I think it would be welcomed, frankly, because again, it's simpler and more secure. It would be more highly valued and it would kind of reduce a lot of the volatility in pay programs that we see today and the challenges around goal setting. But it's a big question mark at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I would just add to that that it certainly sounds like the trend in tenure is downward, particularly for CEOs and CFOs. So that's a really important point, and it might not be workable depending on how that long term is defined. Agreed. Well, thank you so much, Louisa and Margaret. Any final comments before we wrap up the podcast today?
I guess a global comment. The proxy advisory firms, either ISS or Glass Lewis, they have a point of view. Companies listen, companies are concerned, companies want to be shareholder friendly, companies want to do well on say on pay, but they also want to protect their interests and, maintain flexibility to do what they feel supports their business and supports their business strategy. And so, ISS and Glass Lewis are voices in the room, but they're not the only voice.
That's right. And there's no one size fits all. I think that's a great way to conclude today's podcast. Completely agree. Well, thank you again so much, Margaret and Louisa, for joining me today and talking to me about what you found in this review of current disclosures that you recently completed. And to everyone listening in, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Thanks,
All right.
Meredith.
Thanks, Meredith.